Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Negotiation. I am your host, Todd Embley, and on today's show, I interview David Nottingham, the EU General Manager for iPinYo, a leading Chinese MarTech company. David shares his journey from Southeast Asia to the ad tech world, discussing the unique challenges and opportunities within the Chinese digital ecosystem. He explains the workings of iPinYo, its proprietary technology, and how it compares to Western ad tech platforms. The conversation delves into the paid media landscape in China, the importance of audience data, and the rise of platforms like Xiaohongshu. David also highlights the competitive nature of advertising in China and the regulatory environment that shapes the industry. Enjoy.
Everyone works on their phone, or all the kind of the way that you build your audience is based on device IDs. So device IDs is like a mobile identifier, which is unique to your device and what you do within an app. First point is just to basically understand how you can collect that device ID. When a user sees an ad, when that ad is served, you'll get a device ID back. So again, this is a way that you're able to start building audiences from your campaigns. The reason why you obviously need to build audiences in China is that there's quite a lot of people. And we've got 1.1 billion users within a data management platform that we can use for targeting. And obviously, again, when you're looking at a country the size of China, and you've got your brand and you want to make sure you're targeting people that are interested in golf and fishing or whatever, whatever brand we're talking about, you've got to be sure that you know that you're going to be able to target them.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation, brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
David, welcome to The Negotiation Podcast.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So first, where in the world are you today that we're recording you from?
I am in central London. So not far from where all the media agencies are based, near Soho. I'm not sure if you know it well, but yeah, it's kind of, I found a little area which is nicely connected to lots of bars, lots of restaurants, but also where good places to take your clients, if you know how media works. It's well positioned.
Yes, exactly. But maybe not a lot of golf courses if that was part of the agenda with clients.
So I think now with the whole Gen Z thing in London, the golfing is kind of off the menu. People like social darts now and shuffleboarding. Do you know what I mean? I think golfing is no longer an acceptable Friday client activity.
Oh wow, that's too bad. Well, that's fine. I'll take more golf if there's going to be extra on the table, I'll take it. Tell us a little bit about your background, your resume. You know, how did this young man from the West become so involved in working in the East?
So I've been with iPinYo for 7 years now. So, but it feels kind of normal because, I think I grew up in Southeast Asia. So for the first 8 years of growing up, we were dotted around Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia. My dad was an engineer. So wherever, whatever the governments needed to build, we'd move around. And then I was lucky enough to come back to England, but also kind of had a good experience of growing up in the Far East. Then did all my studies and university and stuff like that. And then, as I say, started working in ad tech and programmatic after completing my MBA at Warwick, which was really useful. And I think the Chinese have always found MBAs quite valuable. The people in the West didn't really care about it as much as the Chinese did, but they loved it. Then working in ad tech and can you remember the firm Cambridge Analytica? It was quite
certainly do. Yeah, from the great hack about Donald Trump first election. Yes.
Yeah. So we
the Persuadables.
Yeah, we tried to do something similar, but with paid media. So we had some trackers that we put on a few publishers' websites to start building audiences, not to influence elections, but more to run for targeting. And then basically when the Cambridge Analytica scandal came out, every single publisher that we worked with took their tags off our site and we didn't have a business. So luckily London is well positioned for lots of summits and conferences. So I just looked in the diary, something to do that afternoon, and there was an ad tech conference. And yeah, I think at the time it was when China was really like Chinese travel was absolutely booming. So you still had VAT-free shopping in the UK. So the amount of Chinese that were coming to London was so, it was just, it was huge, huge demand. It was really driving a lot of luxury business. And I think every single advertiser we worked with said, how do you target Chinese people? And I would always just say, oh, go in Google or use DV360 or, do you know what I mean? Use, go on Facebook. And then without really knowing how the market worked. And anyway, just on that afternoon, we went to this conference, this this young guy from Seattle just got up on the stage and he said, right, do you want to target 1.1 billion Chinese people online? And he's like, got the platform out, gave a bit of an introduction. And I was sick, man, just being like, what on earth am I going to do with my life? And this guy just kind of, the golden goose, like fell in my lap. He kind of showed us the platform, had a few meetings with him online to see how we could actually take some of the data from China. But then we've since learned that you can't take data out of China. So got in touch with the CEO out in Beijing, got on a plane, got my head around it all, and then said, right, let's go. And 7 years later, two more offices outside of China. And here we are. So it's been a bit of a, an exciting ride, but you could never tell me 15 years ago that I'd be running a Chinese company in Europe. But it's all worked out nicely.
It's fun. Just dealing with that part of the world is so fascinating. Why don't you introduce us to iPinYou?
So iPinYou is a Chinese ad tech company. I'm not sure if everyone knows, but the Chinese digital ecosystem is all closed or enclosed, which means it's all run. It's not enclosed as in like you can't access it. It's just technically it's all run off Chinese servers. So all the data centers are basically hosted in China. So if you want to run any type of proprietary ad tech technology, it's got to be built for China. So iPinYou is basically one of the first companies to build proprietary technology. So they've got a DSP, which is demand side platform. So that's similar to Google's DV360 and Trade Desk media buying system. So again, it allows you to log in, select the media you want to run across, and target audiences with different types of data. They've got a DMP, which is a data management platform. So that allows you to onboard audience data, organize your audiences, create targets, and then basically activate campaigns using first, second, and third party data. And then finally, they've got something called a CDP, which is a customer data platform, which works very closely with Brands Direct's data to again improve like marketing automation, as I say, to kind of help them organize their full data ecosystem better. So that is the nuts and bolts of it. Like, the main companies in China, there's over 500 people in Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou. So again, in all the major cities. And they kind of started the international team actually first in Seattle to allow for brands or agencies to be able to use the platform because it's all in English and how to access China's digital ecosystem. So if you log in, you can see all the different Chinese publishers. So the Tencent, the ByteDance, all of the individual media. So I think this is something we could kind of talk over is like from a Western perspective, we're very used to the big names like WeChat or Weibo or TikTok. But actually, there's a huge amount of publishers and media in China that are used every day by everyone, but we've got no idea that they exist. So like things like Strava, do you know what I mean? Like I use that every day for my commutes into London on my bike. And yeah, in China, there's something very similar called Keep. If you are interested in like watching things on Netflix or Amazon Prime, they obviously don't work in China. So you've got to use iQIYI or Tencent Video. So like all of these different platforms, it's a completely different ecosystem. But again, the IPNU DSP allows you to serve your ads and target audiences on those types of media.
Well, there's certainly a lot more people who are aware of at least one of those platforms this week, more than they did last week, which is Xiaohongshu, Little Red Book, Red Note, Red, whatever you want to call it, because people are calling it a lot of things these days. But that certainly last week was quite the news. We had Olivia Plotnick on the show last week talking all about that, which, you know, and what Xiaohongshu or Red Note is going to have to do about this influx of Western users that just came out of nowhere from some random video that ended up on TikTok that just drove everybody to download and start using it. They're going to have to figure out how they're going to moderate all of this, all of these new users, alongside the same time when, you know, Mark Zuckerberg came out and said, we're no longer doing third-party moderation on Facebook or through Meta. You know, interesting times in those areas. But yeah, for anybody who wants to go and check that out, go to the last episode with Olivia. You'll find a good discussion on that there. I guess we should probably start. I wanted to ask you if there's anything similar to iPinyo. And I call it Yo because for those who don't know, the pinyin of how you would phonetically say Y-O-U in Mandarin would be Yo. But if you read it from an English perspective, it's Y-O-U, so you say you. So we may oscillate between iPinyo and iPinyu. Is there anything similar in the West that our listeners might be familiar with?
Well, there's a likes of like, yeah, Google's, again, a lot of the Western ad tech or the global ad tech companies did try to access China. So Google was in there and they've got a product called DV360, which again is a DSP. They left in 2016. Trade Desk, or the Trade Desk, they have a China offering. I think the difficulty is for a lot of these Western companies is that because they need to operate in China, they have to adhere to a lot of the regulation. And some of that is technical, but it's also legal. So they obviously, yeah, it just makes a bit of a struggle for a lot of the global apps or platforms to actually activate there. So I think the last one to leave was LinkedIn. And I think that was, they left a couple of years back. So yeah, now basically any Western type of app or media that you're trying to activate across, it's, it's not going to be active in China. So, we try to replicate the kind of the service and the expectations of media buying that are used to in the West. So again, from our perspective, things like reporting, tracking, transparency are kind of the key things from a brand perspective. Not so, because obviously the China market is it's completely different. So if you can see that you've served a million ads in a city that you've never heard of, it might be because that city is not Beijing and Shanghai, but it's got 30 million people in it and you've never heard of it. But again, you need to like be able to see all of that data within a platform. And again, so a lot of the work that we try to do with our system is to make sure that people can see where their ads are bought or see where their ads are served and see where their audiences are engaging with their campaign. So I think there are obviously lots of similarities, and we just try to make it as easy for brands as possible to activate in the region.
Forgetting about China, what's a well-known Western platform that just targets the West that is comparable, or is there just too many to mention?
The Trade Desk, the Zonda, okay. There's again DV360, a lot of these big DSPs. The biggest one that we always had is that when we first started this project of IPNU Europe, we would go to the media agencies and say, oh, who are you targeting at the moment? And they'd be like, oh, we're targeting APAC. And I was like, okay, tell us the countries in APAC. And it would be every country apart from China. I'm just like, you're missing out quite a big one there. Like, behind that, like, oh, we didn't know you could do it. And I was like, oh, well, luckily I'm here now. So do you know what I mean? I think a lot of that, it's kind of been ingrained in people's minds that like it's a different market. So again, a lot of the time they've given responsibility to agencies or specific agencies in China to activate to the local market. But I think the whole point of systems like ours, or again, any DSP for global markets, is it doesn't matter where the people are. It's just another geo to target. Do you know what I mean? You're just making sure audiences. So,
yeah, well, it is very difficult to understand. And well, that's why the negotiation podcast exists. Can you give us an overview of the paid media landscape in China and then how it might compare to the rest of the world?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the media in China is obviously owned by some very well-known companies that we might, or that you probably heard of, so like Tencent, ByteDance, Baidu, Alibaba. So these are all kind of the super apps that have kind of grown to be some of the biggest companies in China. And they basically created ecosystems where you can do everything from you can do shopping, you can watch the news, you can watch your favorite shows, you can do all your education through some of it. So basically what they've done is they've created these, as I said, ecosystems where you can just work with one partner and they've got a piece of technology to access everything. But these ecosystems are highly competitive. So for example, if you were, let's say, working with, let's say, Tencent Video, and then you're trying to drive users to Tmall, which is owned by Alibaba, if you try to click on it, they won't allow you to go to another ecosystem. Do you know what I mean? So some
walled
of the
gardens.
Yeah. So the challenges of the walled gardens is that it's highly competitive. And one thing that we've tried to do is be agnostic. So just to be independent from all of those major players. So it doesn't matter where, who you're selected with, you can work with us and you can have equal access to everything. And obviously a lot of them are completely closed. So like they don't allow anyone to, the only way you can access it is by using their own platform. But I think the main difference is just, some of the metrics that you kind of buy, like again, in China, some media is still done on cost per day, which is kind of old school. Well, like that's kind of like pre-2005. We used to buy tenancy ads. But basically what they do is the most popular media buying slots, you can only buy on a tenancy. So it's a cost per day, when actually in the West, we're used to buying on a CPM or bidding. So again, so you can be a bit more effective and efficient with your buying. But again, in China, they ensure that they can maintain high revenues by, again, selling it as a tenancy. So some of the normal the China market, again, it developed a lot later. So a lot of like the desktop inventory or desktop apps that we would go on to watch the news, that's all in an app ecosystem. So if you think about it from a media buying perspective, it's quite difficult for brands, because Westerners, we like websites and we like that kind of ability to watch the news on our screens at work and then click and then. But in China, it's all done on your phone. So if you ever go into the office, you'll see everyone's works on their work stuff. And then they'll have a couple of phones on their laps. So that's where they'll be doing all their browsing. Do you know what I mean? Because they're on certain sites. But the problem for Westerners is that in China, when you click on an app, you've got to go from an app to a website. And so the whole user journey gets a bit distorted. So it's a bit of a challenge, because again, you have to change the mindset, realizing that in China, it's a complete app ecosystem versus the way that we normally activate, which is done on websites, so on. Then this leads into another problem, which is, again, from a Western perspective, your site probably won't work in China, because there's this kind of illusionary thing called the Great Firewall of China, which is not a great wall. It's just it's on Chinese servers. So it basically means that your site's loading probably 500 miles away in a server in Hong Kong or somewhere like that. So it's going to take a minute or so to load. So again, this is a big challenge for a lot of brands we work with, especially with paid media, is that you can serve ads, but if you want to click on it, it might mean that the landing page that you're going to, yeah, it might take a minute or two to load. And in that, again, Chinese are used to things happening very quickly. And if you've got to wait a minute, they'll probably go and do something else.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, it was, you know, about getting that ICP license, you know, even back
then. Oh, yes.
And, yeah. You know, hosting on Chinese servers. And this is what, and it's funny because, and I talked about this on the last show with Olivia too, it's not like things like Facebook were ostensibly banned. It was just that China said, you need to host it here, and we need to be able to moderate and regulate your platform from within China, and you're not allowed to export data out of China. That's the name of the game. And then, of course, platforms like Facebook would refuse. And they said, okay, well, you're going to be running in mud, or in your case, maybe molasses is a better term, being British. So it wasn't banned. It wasn't blocked. It was just so slow that it was almost unusable. And in today's day, where we're used to everything happening lightning quick, and we just need that dopamine fix like immediately, it just, you're right. Customers will go somewhere else and do something else. They can't wait for that. They're just going to swipe to the next video. They're just going to go back. And so, yes, definitely problematic.
From Western perspective, we all know about GDPR from European brands. So again, kind of data laws that have come into play. So obviously China's got its own version of that, PIPL. So it's personal information privacy law. And again, it's just a very clear and strict set of rules of what you can do with user data. So again, correct, exactly as you said, like if you work with, so brands, if they are working with an app or if they've got CRM data, you've got to follow all of these steps to ensure that the data is protected, it's processed and controlled in the right way. And again, this law is set for China, like GDPR is set for Europe. Do you know what I mean? So again, it's just a regulatory thing that is a standard in the country now. And again, I think from our perspective is like using our platform, it's quite good because we have to adhere to all of those laws. So again, if you work with us, then it's pretty, do you know what I mean? You're immediately abiding by them.
Yeah, you know you're toeing the line.
Yeah, exactly.
And for those of you in North America, GDPR, if you don't already know, is just HIPAA in the EU.
Okay. So I didn't know the North American, but
yeah, it's called HIPAA, Health and Information Personal Privacy Act, something like that. So as we know, data is only as good as it is to use and understand. So how can brands understand audience data in China?
Yeah. So I think one of the big things that marketers have had to deal with recently, especially with Google, is the removal of third-party cookies. So this has been quite a big thing for the ad tech industry. It's like, when Google removes the use of third-party cookies, so cookies basically help brands to basically build audiences based on site actions and site, and basically what users do within their ecosystems online. So it's basically, that was a kind of a big thing that everyone's like, oh, how are we going to survive in a post-cookie-less world? And then I was kind of sitting there in China because cookies never really existed because everyone works on their phone, or all the kind of the way that you build your audience is based on device IDs. So device IDs is like a mobile identifier, which is unique to your device and what you do within an app. So the key thing, well, the first point is just to basically understand how you can collect that device ID. So again, when a user sees an ad, again, from within a specific publisher, when that ad is served, you will get a device ID back. So again, this is a way that you're able to start building audiences from your campaigns. The reason why you obviously need to build audiences in China is that there's quite a lot of people. So I think within one of the DMPs we work with, which is from mobile carrier data from China Unicom, Asia Info, and China Mobile, we've got 1.1 billion users within a data management platform that we can use for targeting. And obviously, again, when you're looking at a country the size of China, like 1.4 billion people, and you've got your brand and you want to make sure you're targeting people that are interested in golf and fishing or whatever brand we're talking about, you've got to be sure that you know that you're going to be able to target them. So again, like there is in the West, there's lots of methods in which you can do that. And in China, I think there's over 14 different data management platforms. So again, we've got one, Tencent's got their own, Ali's got their own, TikTok or Douyin has got their own version. So again, it's all different ways in which you can create these target audiences. So it can be done on app activity, it can be done on geo, it can be done on transaction data. We've recently developed one called CAD, which is Chinese aviation data. So we're basically able to target users based on their historical travel patterns. So again, if we know someone's been to Europe in the last 5 years, we can target them with a Visit USA advert because we know that they're long distance travelers. So I think the key thing from an audience data perspective is you just got to ask your partner, like, what are the options? And then you just got to make sure that, yeah, it's covering what you need to achieve.
Now, we mentioned it earlier, this explosion of Xiaohongshu, or Red Note, Red as we're calling it, in the West. Okay, people started downloading this app en masse. And we have PDD. There's so many that we haven't even talked about. But tell us a little bit about Xiaohongshu. It is the app du jour for sure. Tell us about those Red Note brand campaigns and how to optimize those campaigns with yourself and iPinyo.
Yeah, so Xiaohongshu's, it's a bit like Instagram. Again, it's like started off being like, it's had like huge growth with like cosmetics brands. Again, like working with influencers or KOLs to basically show off doing makeup or, I'm not really a makeup fan, but seeing people like how to do tutorials. So anyway, so it had this huge growth, basically like live streaming and influencers or KOLs, they call them in China. Now to the case that they've built a media buying system within there. They've built an e-commerce platform within there. So again, it's following the same path of the walled gardens. It's like basically how can you keep users in there, drive sales and so on. So the thing the challenge that you have with all of these walled gardens and also the way that you run campaigns in there is that every brand is probably trying to target the same user. So it gets very competitive from an advertising perspective when you're trying to engage with a specific audience. So let's say you're trying to target Gen Zs that are into low cost makeup. There might be, as I say, 200, 300 million people on the platform who will fall into that category. So when you're using your brand, so when you're running your advertising campaign within there, you're probably using the same data that all of your competitors are using at the same time. So one thing that we've started doing with a few agencies in China is with our data teams, we've started building external second party and first party data audiences. So what we do there is we basically take like an audience group that we've collected from either an advertising campaign or someone's direct site sales, and then basically created custom audience segments that we then pass into Red. Because basically what this means is these are your potential customers. So instead of using the same data that everyone else is using, you use data that is actually super specific from a guaranteed third-party source or from your own source to then run the advertising inside the platform. So basically, it's a way of, again, using the data inside the platform is fine, but this is just a way of being more targeted and basically, yeah, ensuring that you target the right users at the right time.
I think there's so much to unpack. And there's so much to understand. And again, we do the best we can here at the podcast about helping people understand what's going on there. But is the goalposts are always moving. It is a fast moving target. Things change lightning quick over there. You know, and when we talk about walled gardens, for those that don't understand, the best way I can put it is that if you were in the West to search up a product on Google and find out what you wanted to buy, there's usually a way that you can click a link, open up in Amazon, direct to that product and buy it. And Amazon and Google share revenue, or there's some sort of lead fee or something like this that gets paid to Google for supporting taking people or sending people to Amazon. So Amazon might pay Google a small percentage of whatever they made, this kind of thing. The walled gardens, as we talk about in China, prevent that. So even just using something from 20 years ago where it was Baidu, and that was the big search engine. If you were to search and try to explore and do product discovery on Baidu, you could not just simply go over to Alibaba and buy it. You would have to leave the Baidu ecosystem, leave those trackers, go over, go into Alibaba on your own, search, find the product, and then hopefully be buying the correct one that you wanted. And that's what we mean about walled gardens, is that they just choose not to play together. They don't want to share. They want to own the whole experience. And so that's what we're talking about. Did I get that right as far as you understand it as well, David?
Yeah, it's very, so I think it's 10 out of 10, top marks on that one. But I think,
I got a 10 out of 10 from MBA graduate. I'm only a BBA.
Interesting one for China. And this is, again, it's linked to like a lot of stuff that's happened recently in the news. So like you heard like with Jack Ma and Alibaba and Tencent. So basically the power of these super apps has got so big that the Chinese government has actually looked at ways to trying to reduce their power. So again, the gardens, unlike in the States, well, it's happening a bit in the States, probably not under Trump, they'll probably go up another level. But in China, they did try to bring them back into line. So for example, with some platforms, they would say, if you use our media buying service, if you sign exclusivity with our e-commerce platform, you get free usage of our media buying service. Do you know what I mean? But they would write this into all the contracts, so basically making you leave. But the Chinese government made them remove some of these clauses. So again, to kind of reduce their power. So yeah, I think in some ways it's good, especially good for us, because it means that users have got more choice of where they go. They don't just have to stay with one partner. And I think that's kind of the way China's moving now, to try and make sure that growth is in a more controlled way.
David Nottingham, EU General Manager for iPinYo, a leading Chinese MarTech company. Thank you very much for A, putting up with my cold and my coughing, and B, coming on the show today. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Todd. It's a pleasure.
Okay, as usual, for those that want to get in touch, you can reach us at podcast@wpic.co. We would love any advice, tips, or guest recommendations that you might have. We'd also love a 5-star review on any of the podcast platforms or even on YouTube. That really helps feed the algorithms that gets this podcast in front of a lot of other people that don't know about it yet. For those of you who are watching on the YouTube video on the WPIC YouTube channel, don't forget that we have the audio only podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms, and vice versa. If you want to see the video, go check out the WPIC YouTube channel. Now, from me and from David and from everybody at the negotiation team, thank you very much for listening and or watching. We'll see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.